This is Pure Decking, show number 537 for Thursday, September the 28th, 2008. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and again, just like a couple of weeks ago, we're announcing it now in the show, so I don't forget to do it later. No show next week. I will be delayed. of course, and tonight we have a madman. What is up, madman?
Nothing much. Bit of advice. If you're going to be parking anywhere near a teenage driver, get a large neon flashing sign with a bullhorn attached to it that just repeats, "My car is parked here, you dumbass. My car is parked here, you dumbass." And the sign just, you know, flashing car here so that they'll miss it. Because apparently the backup camera isn't enough for them to notice a car. The warning beep that the car makes with the backup camera isn't enough to notice the car. And the side mirrors, back mirror, and looking around isn't enough to notice a bright gold car.
Hmm.
I didn't know this. I thought my car stood out like a sore thumb. But I'm, you know,
even though I've driven
for a couple of years.
Well, you just made me wonder, because I just thought about it. Even though my car has the backup camera, I still do the whole flip your shoulders around and look. Even though, frankly, the way the back the car is shaped, that backup camera probably has a better view than, but just, I don't know, habit, still actually looking, you know, by turning my head.
Yeah, but I think he may have, you know, had several fused discs in his neck and no one told me, because apparently, you know, the kid had a hard life and doesn't know how to look around for vehicles. But, you know, no hard feelings. Still like the kid. I'm just going to be pestering him about this until I buy a new car. And those who know me know that this is going to be a very long time of me pestering
the child. Well, given your previous history with vehicles, you're going to drive that car till it explodes and you abandon it on the side of the road.
Correct.
I believe it took like 6 years for the last one to do that.
Oh, yeah, that's because I fucked up on it. But this one, I'm expecting to get much longer.
Are you actually doing the maintenance on it on this time?
Yes.
Okay, see, that's rare. You don't normally do the maintenance.
No, I don't normally regularly do the maintenance, but I've always changed the oil and stuff in my cars. Now, I will say, when you do your own flush and fill, well, this was actually before I did the flush and fill, there are multiple types of antifreeze, for everyone who doesn't know this. And you don't want to mix them. Because it's like mixing, I don't know, A and B blood. There's some random clots. And that can cause some trouble with your engine and blowing random hoses. So yeah, keep that in mind.
This coming from the man who once told me you had done the math and figured out it was cheaper just to buy a new $1,000 car whenever they blow up than actually do oil changes.
Well, the cost of used cars have gone up. After you do that math.
Actually, that's a fair point. And somebody who knows about this shit much better than either of us, we have Aryu.
I was going to say that would have been true before Obama's cash for clunkers, man. That used to be the thing we'd do back in the day. Pick up a $500 car for the weekend and drive it like it was stolen. For shits and giggles. Well, you know, you've got four buddies, like you and three buddies, chip in 120 each, go buy a dunger for the weekend, and go rally racing with it. You know what I mean? And then you just dump it in the bush when you're done.
Well, I mean, you do have most of your continent that nobody's using, so...
Well, yeah, back in the day where, you know, you could have a little bit of fun.
Oh, yeah. And one good thing, if you're young and your friends are healthy, all four of you get out, pick a corner of the car, and then see if you can lift it up, just so if you go mudding in some, you know, cornfield that you don't own, you don't have to worry about getting the farmer to pull you out if you fuck up.
Madman, we used to have there was a bush track that had some industrial railway lines, and we used to play Dukes of Hazzard over that. See how far we could jump the car.
That's great.
I'm sorry your car got damaged there, Madman. Take a picture of it, and I'll tell you how to fix it.
Oh, I had to take 16 of them. Fucking shit.
It's just in a door or something like that. It's easily popped out.
Rear driver's side quarter panel. If I take the lining out of the trunk, I could probably pop it out.
Yeah, a lump of wood and a bit of wood and a mallet. You'll be good to go.
Just fill in the entire dent with body fill. Sand it down.
I've seen that. I knew a dude who bought a really nice car, put a really good stereo in it, and when he was showing everybody the bass, half of the car fell apart.
Oh, no!
Yeah, vibrated the bog clean out of the car.
Or you'd be like those guys who used to do, what was it, the ramen and super glue they would fix stuff with?
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible. That shit's water soluble.
I was going to say, it'll look great till it rains.
Or if this is going to date me, but I used to work on cars that had lead fill.
Yeah. Well, you know, gas used to have lead in it too, so.
Those were the days.
Octane the good gasoline. Boost. You know why they took that out, right?
No, because people complained about the little.
Good for your car.
It fucks up the catalytic converter. But it's great for your engine.
Catalytic converters shouldn't be a thing. They're a hindrance.
Then it's a good thing you got those people doing you a favor going around cutting them out.
You'll get better miles per gallon if you get rid of it. Your engine will run better. Yeah. Dumbest thing ever invented.
I don't know. If you believe acid rain was a thing, then it's probably good.
Acid rain was never.
I used the qualifier.
I don't believe there was that for Ice Age.
Oh, the 70s were wrong about everything.
So were the 80s and the 90s, the 2000s and 20s.
Hey, I'm going to have to go with heavy metal was not wrong. Blasphemer.
Anyway, what's the first story?
First story is from Tech Radar. Many firms aren't reporting breaches to the proper authorities. Surprising nobody.
Nobody.
A concerning amount of companies are pretty woeful in reporting the cyber attacks and breaches they suffer, both internally and externally. Research conducted by Keeper Security found that nearly half, 48%, of the IT and security leaders it surveyed that have experienced a cybersecurity incident did not report it to appropriate authorities. What's more, 41% of such attacks were not even reported to leadership within the company itself.
Oof. How do you expect to get a bigger budget?
Plausible deniability on that one.
But that's how you get a bigger budget in IT, isn't it?
Depends on the IT department. I've had security positions in the past where I was told not to write up these reports.
Wow.
Because they would sit on somebody's desk and then get round filed. And then when the incident that I described happened, I was asked, well, why didn't you prepare for that? And I said, I did. I wrote up the report. Here's everything you needed to know about what to do to fix it. And then, you know, the fact that it went through email and a few other things like that meant there were records of it, which I was then told by some senior leadership people not to write up those reports without permission.
Wow.
I was literally supposed to check and make sure it was okay to write up a security report on a system. I ignored that and still wrote up all of the stuff I found. I just sent it to my boss directly.
Yeah.
And let him play the games. And the comedy of that is when I left that position, it was right after I had caught a very senior leader abusing administrative access to an email backup system. Basically, the email backup system wasn't documented as existing at all, right? And it was hooked into the email server, so it's like, okay, the email admins have to know about this. So of course I check with them, and they're like, yeah, we were told not to document that. And I'm like, what? What do you mean you were told not to document that? It's like, no, they bought it and they've got a license for it, but they definitely don't want it on the system, or they don't want it on the system diagrams. I'm like, well, that's unsettling. And my boss said, keep digging. So I found out later my boss knew what was going on, and I was actually set up to find this thing, quote unquote, find this thing. It was because leadership was using the email backup system to go in and read internal emails from budgeting and company leadership and a few other things like that. And the amusing part is, so I found it. I wrote it up. I explained it in the write-up. And then I was told to help the president of IT set up a proper account on the thing so that it didn't look like somebody was breaking in, because he was just using the generic admin account.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, at least that way there's some, you know, auditability by having him use his own account, not the root account. So I showed him
how... Depending on how senior this is, they have access to those mails.
He had... It was a way of having access without the logging being created in the primary email system.
Huh?
Because all email was copied into the archive as a backup in case the email went down.
Looking at you, Hillary.
And amusingly enough, I left that position voluntarily. I was taking a better job about, I don't know, 3 weeks after I wrote that up. And I got notes from some people in the old job later who wanted to know if I'd been fired for writing that up. Because apparently the president of IT who was doing this got caught because he was knowing things he wasn't supposed to know. And because they figured out what he was doing about a couple of months after I had left, he was no longer there. And, but yeah, I have been in positions where I was told as a security engineer, or I guess at the time I was an analyst, whatever, not to write up findings because it was inconvenient that there was documented evidence that those findings existed and they didn't fix them. So I still,
on a different reason, just outside of straight corruption, the fines sometimes are cheaper if you don't know there's a problem.
Yeah, that's a good point, Madman.
Well, there's so also...
They willingly don't know there's a problem.
Right. There's also some IT people think they'll be fired if they, you know, say, oh, my system was breached. Well, why'd you let that happen? That's almost always the first question. It's like, well, hey, this system was breached. Well, why did you let that happen?
It's like, I didn't let that happen. It just happened.
I tried to make it harder to happen, but you all wouldn't approve the budget. You wouldn't approve the spend. You wouldn't give me the system downtime to fix the issues. So, yeah, it's almost always a lot of times I've had a lot of leadership in the past. My current position is much better about that. It's one of the reasons I'm sticking around, even though I could probably double my income if I went job hunting. But I've got good leadership, so that's kind of worth something, you know? Yeah, the first question out of their mouth isn't, why did you let this happen? That's rare, so. So sometimes you've got people who just won't, you know, report it up the chain because they're afraid they'll be fired for letting it happen because you've got leadership that doesn't understand how the world works, at least in regards to IT. The Cybersecurity Disaster Survey, Incident Reporting and Disclosure, also found that nearly three-quarters, or 74%, of respondents were worried about a cybersecurity disaster negatively impacting their organization, and about 40% had already experienced this. A further 75% of those admitted or 4 of their 75 of those that admitted to not reporting an incident said they felt guilty, with most, 43%, citing a fear of repercussions as the reason for keeping tight-lipped. Damage to the firm's reputation was a main consideration. Negative financial impacts, 40%, was another reason for failing to report, as was deeming it unnecessary, 36%, or simply forgetting, 32%, to report it. Yeah, I've been in those calls where they deem it unnecessary to report it. It's like, well, what's this data really worth? We've decided it's worth just about below the reporting threshold. It's like, yeah, but it's, yeah, anyways. It's like the reporting threshold is such that a single mortgage is above it. You don't think that that's worth? No, we don't think that that, you know, actually works out as an evaluation. I've heard these games. I've heard all these games. Keeper Security CEO Darren Gluckwein? I don't know how to say that name, said that the research showed that organizations need to make, quote, significant cultural changes around cybersecurity, which is a shared responsibility, unquote. He added that, quote, accountability starts at the top and leadership must create a corporate culture that prioritizes cybersecurity incident reporting. Otherwise, they will open themselves up to legal liabilities and costly financial penalties and place employees, customers, stakeholders, and partners at risk, unquote. I always love these third-party people saying, oh, you have to create a culture of exactly what, you know, I care most about. It's like, yeah, that's never that simple, but you have to report your incidents, though, because there are laws around that kind of stuff now, and it's probably not worth the risk if you have an incident and don't report it, but yeah, reputation damage is a big deal, too, so. The threat from cyber attacks and breaches has never been higher, and thanks to the rise of advanced tools such as generative AI and sophistication of all forms of attack is increasing too. Ransomware attacks and malware infections are all too common for businesses nowadays, both of which severely compromise the safety and data of both themselves and their customers. Keeper Security encourages organizations to be transparent and honest about reporting cyber crimes. So I wanted to talk about this a little bit. I mean, it surprises nobody that companies aren't reporting this stuff, right?
So, I would love to say it does, but I understand many of them don't.
Well, I mean, you know, think about it from, you know, a business leader's point of view. Well, if we don't report it and the bad guy doesn't say anything about it, no one will ever know what happened, especially if they pay the fuckers off, which happens way more often than it should. You know, I used to joke about the business, you know, the consulting business fee that shows up in financial reports. That's, you know, a lot of times where they've paid off somebody who broke into their systems, paid the ransom.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, if nobody says anything about it, why make trouble for yourself? I get that point of view. It makes it really hard for security research to track adversarial organizations are doing. And yes, I was searching for the correct language to use there. Because
I'll go with assholes.
Well,
these assholes are doing.
I mean, yeah, assholes, sure, but a lot of times these days it's not kids exploring a system. It's not.
No, it's not.
It's not even hacktivism most of the time. Nowadays it's companies operating in foreign countries that don't quite have laws quite as complementary or, you know, as useful as our own, especially when it comes to attacking foreign entities. Because, you know, I've talked about it on the show before, if I go hack a company in Russia, the FBI will happily arrest my ass for doing it. You know, the company in Russia would have to complain, sure, but yeah, the FBI would totally arrest me for it. In Russia, if they attack, if they, you know, hack a company here, and you report to the Russian authorities, they won't fucking care. Be like that comedian who takes us, you know, to be like, bitch, this is Russia. You know, I mean, they don't care.
Yeah.
Same thing with a lot of countries, especially Middle East and Africa. They just don't give a fuck. So
the resources.
Well, yeah. Well, there's that, I mean, even India, where it is technically illegal, they make a lot of money off of it, so they don't fight it that hard. So, you know, they don't normally do much about it. So you actually have companies set up that's what they do. They hold, you know, they get into American companies and hold the data for ransom or try to extract cash or other things like that. And, you know, scams for like, you know, it's like a freaking business model in some parts of the world, you know, attacking first world countries, basically. You know, it's not just the United States. They also do it to European and, you know, things like that in Canada. But,
Canada's got an attack right now, shutting down their military stuff.
There was something about that. I remember people saying Justin Trudeau was angry about something. I'm like, who cares?
Yeah, I just briefly saw a headline this morning that I just hoped. I don't care.
Yeah. So, now if Suave told me the citizens of Canada were upset, it'd be a different conversation.
Yeah.
I'd be concerned about citizens of Canada being upset, but Justin Trudeau being upset, whatever. He's not going to do anything.
Yeah, go applaud a Nazi, you fucking idiot.
Yeah, he's not going to do anything. But, anyways.
On a lot of that, what can a country do? It's either invade or do nothing, is it pretty much. I mean, I guess if you happen to be the global reserve currency, you could play some financial games with them. But How far is the country willing to push this?
And that's a very fair point, Madman. It really is. That's kind of why I wanted to talk about the story in general, is because I felt like we could do a little bit more with it than what was here. Because, you know, yeah, I mean, I can totally confirm all of the behavior they're talking about in that article totally happens. And it sucks, because it does make it hard to figure out what's going on at a bigger picture.
But I guess, just what's going on with the bigger picture. If you can't honestly do reporting, how can you honestly fix any problems?
You can't. You know, I about lost my shit the other day at a Indian contractor who was being project manager for a bunch of other developers who was chewing them out a new one for opening up tickets and attaching them to his epics. Because they were fucking up his metrics. And it's like, but they're legitimate issues. Like one of the developers said it was a blocking issue. How should I have reported it then? And he said, and the guy who's the PM is like, no, you will not report a thing on here. You will not attach anything to my epics without my explicit permission. And he's like, my metrics have to be accurate. And I'm thinking, buddy, if you're not letting your people report issues, your metrics are not accurate. But it's not my department, so I couldn't say much about it other than I didn't, you know, I did not like hearing that it sounds like you're trying to manipulate your metrics. Oh no, we're not doing that. We're just trying to ensure that they're accurate. No, it's not what that sounded like to me, but I kind of dropped it because it was never going to end, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I let my boss know. I don't know that we can do anything because it's a different tower than ours, but it's like, you're doing what? And I mean, I know all of that happens everywhere to an extent, but no, you're absolutely right, Madman. If you don't know that it's a problem, you can't fix it. So I don't know.
Or my favorite long, useless meeting of everyone agrees it's an issue, but the ones that can fix it, it's like it's more problem to fix than not, so we're not going to.
Oh my!
And my department gets to deal with that problem continuously.
Yeah. Oh, my favorite is the, those systems are going to be decommissioned in 6 months. 6 months later, oh yeah, we had to bump the date on that back. Okay, so since you're bumping the date back, are you going to fix them? Oh, no, because we're going to decommission them in 6 months. And they just keep moving the date. We keep moving the date.
Just 2 more weeks to flatten the curve. Just 2 more weeks.
It's like, guys, you've got 4 systems left out of about 500 that are not considered end of life. Like, they're still getting patches from the manufacturers. Are we going to do anything about that? Well, they're going away in 6 months. Oh, for God's sake. So when you write it up and send it up the chain and then start a management shit fight between security leadership and IT leadership, and IT is leadership coming back saying, well, we can't do anything about it. We don't have anybody to dedicate. We don't have resources for it. And it's going away in 6 months. They've gotten burned on that a couple of times now. So I think it's starting to, I think something's finally going to happen, but they keep doing it. And it's like at the board level now with a couple of these environments, it's like, you promised a date on these and now you've missed it twice. It's like, come on. You're starting to hurt your credibility here. Anyways, that's all I have on that. Does anybody have anything else, or you want to move on?
I think we're good.
All right, next article is from Ars Technica. Backdoored firmware lets China state hackers control routers with magic packets.
What?
I love this.
They're not magic. They're just packets.
It's a variation on port knocking, which is cool. So if you're not aware of what port knocking is, so what's happening is you are monitoring traffic that's blocked by a tool, in this case Cisco firewalls, right? And if the traffic happens to meet a certain pattern, that can trigger code that's already in the device to open it up. So if you're setting up your own, you might set up a series of port knocks to open up a port. So let's say I wanted to run, I don't know, a VNC server somewhere on the internet, but I didn't want to just have VNC sitting on an open port, right? I could set up a firewall with a port knocking scheme to where I had to ping several high numbered ports, you know, in a specific order, and then the port for VNC opens up, right?
Yeah.
And so that's port knocking. This is similar, except I think they're using different packet headers than just what port number. I think it's looking for a little bit more detail than that, which is where you get the magic packet. Hackers backed by the Chinese government are planting malware into routers that provide long-lasting and undetectable backdoor access into the networks of multinational companies in the U.S. and Japan, governments in both countries said Wednesday. The hacking group, tracked under names including BlackTech, Palmerworm, Temp.Overload, CircuitPanda, and RadioPanda, have been operating since at least 2010, a joint advisory published by government entities in the U.S. and Japan reported. The group has a history of targeting public organizations and private companies in the U.S. and East Asia. The threat actor is somehow gaining administrative credentials to the network devices used by subsidiaries, and then in using that control to install malicious firmware that can be triggered with, quote, magic packets, unquote, to perform specific tasks. The hackers then use control of those devices to infiltrate networks of companies that have trusted relationships with the breached subsidiaries. Quote, specifically, upon gaining an initial foothold in a target network and gaining administrator access to network edge devices, black tech cyber actors often modify the firmware to hide their activity across the edge devices to further maintain persistence into the network, unquote, officials wrote on Wednesday's advisory. Quote, to extend their foothold across an organization, black tech actors target branch routers, typically smaller appliances used at remote offices, to connect to a corporate headquarters and then abuse the trusted relationship of the branch routers within the corporate network being targeted. Black tech actors then use the compromised public-facing branch routers as part of their infrastructure for proxying traffic, blending in with corporate network traffic, and pivoting to other victims on the same corporate network, unquote. Most of Wednesday's advisory referred to routers sold by Cisco. In an advisory of its own, Cisco said that the threat actors are compromising the devices after acquiring administrative credentials and that there's no indication they are exploiting vulnerabilities. Cisco also said that the hackers' ability to install malicious firmware exists only for older company products. I always love that. It's like, yeah, buy our new one. It's better. Newer ones are equipped with secure boot capabilities that prevent them from running unauthorized firmware, the company said.
For until now. It doesn't. Yeah, until it doesn't. Jesus, fuck these people.
Well, it's always a cat and mouse game, right? It's like, okay, yeah. We've added a firmware check. Oh, they defeated the firmware check. Now we've added two firmware checks. Yep, they figured out how to defeat both firmware checks. Well, now we're encrypting the boot media. Oh, well, the keys got leaked. Oops. I mean, you know, it's always a game of escalation. So, which kind of makes me wonder if the most secure way to operate might be loading up something like Windows 98. Good luck finding some hardware that'll run it correctly, though.
Possibly that, or maybe looking at how much of this actually needs to be remote, and how much of your network truly needs to talk to the internet. I wouldn't mind going back to the programs I'm using for work actually running on my PC instead of needing to log into a web browser for everything.
You will dance in the cloud, madman. The cloud is fluffy. The cloud is good.
Yeah, but my fucking ping is terrible.
Have you seen what's in that cloud?
The cloud is clean. The cloud is good. All praise the cloud.
And it just means there's more points of failure for getting my shit out into the world. And I don't want my shit in the world. I don't even think I should be trusted with my shit. And it's my shit.
Oh, there's a take your poo to the loo joke in there somewhere, but I don't feel like finding it.
I mean, the cloud has worked out exactly how we said it was going to work out when they first decided to go the cloud way. We were talking about it way back in the day.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm kind of retarded.
Mm-hmm. I am.
But, yeah, I mean, it's... is what it is. To install their modified bootloader, the U.S. and Japanese advisory said the threat actors install an older version of the legitimate firmware and then modify it as it runs in memory. The technique overrides signature checks in the Cisco ROM monitor signature validation functions, specifically functions of Cisco's iOS image load test and the field upgradable RONMON integrity test. The modified firmware, which consists of a Cisco iOS loader that installs an embedded iOS image, allows the compromised routers to make connections over SSH without being recorded in event logs. Well, shit.
Great.
And it's on the router.
Even if you're doing logging, it's not going to log it?
Well, not at the router level. You might catch it if you have something monitoring your network traffic, but I can tell you most corporations don't monitor their traffic directly. At least not all of their network traffic. Not because they don't want to. It's just expensive as fuck to have hardware that'll keep up these days. I mean, I would love to do some direct network logging of some of the environments I have to work with, but it's literally not economically feasible to do so for some of them. It's just, I mean, you can't. You would have to buy so much network gear to be able to duplicate the traffic over and to be able to monitor it. It's just, I mean, yes, there are companies that will sell solutions for it, but every single time I've done it, we've always had to go in and filter stuff out because they can't keep up with what they claim they can keep up with. So, although SSH packets would be a good one to normally monitor because that's almost always administrative. Black Tech members use the modified firmware to override code in legitimate firmware and add the SSH backdoor, bypass logging, and monitor incoming traffic for, quote, magic packets, unquote. The term refers to small chunks of data the attackers send to the infected router. While they appear random and innocuous in system logs, these packets allow the attackers to serendipitously enable or disable backdoor functionality. So, yeah, instead of port knocking or something like that, it's a code that's in, like, the packet header or something. Wednesday's advisory urged administrators to take various measures to detect any infections and prevent the possibility of becoming infected. It cautioned that some traditional detection techniques, such as checking firmware for cryptographic signatures, aren't effective. Quote, it would be trivial for black tech actors to modify values in their backdoors that would render specific signatures of this routine, their router backdoor, obsolete, unquote, the advisory said. Quote, For more robust detection, network defenders should monitor network devices for unauthorized downloads of bootloaders and firmware images and reboots. Network defenders should also monitor for unusual traffic destined to the router, including SSH, unquote. Detection and mitigation instructions. I've got a whole list here of sysadmin stuff to do, but you know, if it was me, well, it also ends up running out of RAM. I was going to say, I wonder if there's a way to do a read-only bit on the actual firmware storage device. Like a lot of routers, you know, Cisco routers used to use compact flash cards to store their firmware and their local disk. So, you know, you could sometimes set those things to be read only if they had the little tab on them. Most of them, the compact flash cards anyways, didn't. SD cards did, but not, you know, so I'm kind of wondering if you stuck an SD card in a compact flash adapter and one, would it even respect the little read-only tab? Because that's really a software flag, because all it's doing is shorting two pins in the socket together. But two, it all runs out of memory anyways. I'm actually of a different opinion. You know, they said it's scheduled reboots. I think you should be rebooting most of your network infrastructure on a fairly regular basis. And the reason I say that is a fairly common failure mode of aged network gear is that the firmware will be running in memory of the device, but whatever is the actual storage medium, like that compact flash card or in later machines, usually just chips on the board, will fail. You know, they'll burn out, they'll disconnect, whatever. And so the router works fine up until you restart it. And a lot of times, a lot of problems with routers come from things like buffers filling up. And well, in this case, it's malicious code being loaded into memory, right? So if you are rebooting your routers fairly frequently, like, I mean, weekly, you know, of course, that flashes everything back to disk. As long as the actual disks, you know, have some kind of an integrity check on them, although they said in this case it might not be good enough, gives you a chance at catching that kind of stuff, right? But it also forces the router to constantly flash back to the configuration on the disk rather than what's in memory, and flushes the caches and all that good stuff out too. So I think you ought to be rebooting these things fairly often, although I'm fairly certain most network engineers would want to hit me over the head for saying it.
Not my problem.
So.
Oh. Trouble keeping its settings right when we get them working. Now you want us to turn it off and on and pray that it works?
Yep. That's right. If I had my way, I would design. I scared the crap out of a network engineer because I told him, "All right, we're going to do some resiliency testing." He goes, "Yeah, I'm like cool. I'm going to go pull a random cable in the server rack." And he goes, "No, you're not.
I'm going to shoot you before you get to the server rack."
That's what I threatened to do. I said, "I'm going to go pull one random Ethernet cable. I'm just going to reach in and grab one and pull." And he goes, "The fuck you are?"
Just a prank, bro.
It's like, "No, you said you had proper redundancy through everything." He goes, "Yeah, but I don't know what cable you're going to pull." It's like, "Well, if you've got proper redundancy, it shouldn't matter." He's like, "No, we're not testing it that way." I'm like, "All right, well, how do you want to test it?" And he looked at me, he's like, I don't know. It's like, okay. So show me on the diagram where I'm not allowed to pull a cable from so we can pick an appropriate place to test from. And he goes, I don't have that. That ended up going up to the boss, and the boss was like, just skip it for now. I'm like, but we have a requirement to do. Pair of
garden shears, dude, and go, it's resiliency test day, bitch.
It's like, well, how am I supposed to test? He told me to come up with a different test. I'm like, okay.
If he doesn't have a diagram of where the cables go, let's say, I don't know, one of the servers in the rack dies. Do they just expect you to pull one cable at a time out?
Yes, Madman. The answer is yes.
Madman, I actually have a photo of that server rack. If you'll give me a minute, I'll send it to you.
Oh, God, is it spaghetti? Please tell me it's spaghetti, because part of me wants to laugh.
The reason I have a photo is I had to tell a different team, because I was the only one with access. I no longer have access to that data center, by the way, which is, in my mind, hilarious, because there's like two people now who have access to it. And they've called me and said, hey, can you go out and check this? Nope, sure can't. You all took my access away. Can you request it again? Nope, sure can't. Because it won't.
No, because that's going to require me to work.
It won't get it until I won't get it for at least a day, and you all just take it away again. So, where is that picture? That's been a bit. But yeah, Mad Ben, I'll send you a picture of that rack real quick as soon as I can find it. I guess it's been a couple of years since I took that picture. Yeah, it's basically what you're imagining.
I mean, I'm fine with my bad cable management because it's fine. But if it's, you know, a business, I might want, you know, future employees to know what the fuck's on the network and where everything's plugged into. Turn around the thing.
There you go, Mevin. Found the link.
People get promoted. People get fired. People find better jobs.
That's the back of that rack.
Wow. Oh. I'm so sorry.
Here's the front of it. See, I took these pictures to explain to a different team why I would not be, you know, touching anything in it. Because we were on a Teams call, and he said, look, can you pull that server out and do something? I don't remember what they wanted me to do something, but they wanted me to pull a server out of there. And I said, I'm afraid to touch this rack. And they said, what do you mean I'm afraid to touch this rack? I said, hang on. So I took those pictures and sent it to them. And I got that first one, and I got a note back, we understand, don't touch it.
There's three different people who've worked on this.
Oh, more than that.
Yeah, I can see three distinctive cable bundles. But yeah, that's a rough one.
It's been at least five, but yeah. You understand why I was reluctant to do anything to that rack.
Yeah.
It's like, just stick your hand in there and pull on a cable. No, I don't think I will. So
I don't think this will be as useful as either of us want that to be.
And no, I cannot post those photos in the IRC for anybody to see because it's...
Yeah, stupid.
It's still a data center at a place that I have a connection to. So... But yeah, you know, those cable gore photos that float around the internet, those are real.
not the worst I've seen, but it's definitely fucking up there.
So.
All right, next story.
Next story is from TechCrunch. Reddit is removing the ability to opt out of ad personalization based on your activity on the platform.
And they just keep going from strength to strength over there at Reddit.
Mm-hmm. That's... Reddit said Wednesday that the platform is revamping its privacy settings with an aim to make ad personalization and account visibility toggles consistent. Which, in other words, means the little toggles weren't doing shit before anyways. Most notably, though, it is removing the ability to opt out of ad personalization based on Reddit activity. There's a common thread with a lot of these companies that start fucking over their user base. It's around the time they either go public or are trying to go public. And Reddit's been trying to do an IPO for about a year now.
Yeah.
Unity, I'm not sure exactly when they went public, but they went public a little while ago, and they went shitty too. So I think what happens is some MBA types get in and try to say, okay, this is a business now. And, well, in chasing short-term valuation, kill the product, basically. I don't know if you all saw it or not. Apparently, several like longtime Unity user Unity support groups are shutting down, saying they don't want anything to do with it anymore.
Yeah.
So. Okay, the company said that they will still have opt-out controls, quote, in select countries, unquote, without specifying which ones.
The ones that require it.
Yeah. It mentioned in a blog post that users won't see more ads, but they will see better targeted ads following this change. Okay, better targeted means we're collecting your data. Quote, Reddit requires very little personal information, and we like it that way. Our advertisers instead rely on on-platform activity. What communities you join, leave, upvotes, downvotes, and other signals to get an idea of what you might be interested in, unquote, Reddit said. The company is essentially removing the option to not track you based on whatever you do on Reddit. Additionally, Reddit is consolidating two toggles on showing ads based on activity and information from partners into one toggle. There is now no way to separate these two settings. Reddit is seemingly removing toggles for getting post recommendations based on general location and activity on partner sites and apps. It's not clear if this means those parameters will be used for post suggestions by default and there is no way to turn them off. The social network said it will also roll out controls to limit certain advertising categories, such as alcohol, weight loss, dating, gambling, pregnancy, and parenting. The company noted that limiting ad control will possibly show you fewer ads from mentioned categories if the toggles are turned off, but it won't filter out all ads. Reddit justified this by saying it uses manual tagging and machine learning to label ads, so there's a chance that it's not 100% accurate. Reddit is also simplifying its localization customization settings under a single menu, which will be easily accessible through settings and apps on the web. Social platform has made several changes to increase monetization and infamously change. Yeah, yeah, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, Reddit's getting less and less useful. I pretty much only open up Reddit now when I'm hunting for stories for decking, just because I haven't found a better link aggregator for all of that stuff yet, although it's usually step two or three of the process as opposed to step one. So, because I've got several sites I just check now before I go to Reddit, then I go to Reddit, but because I'm kind of hoping to get away from it entirely, but yeah, I'm going to suggest uBlock Origin. uBlock Origin works pretty well with Reddit ads.
Works well for me.
Mm-hmm. You know, you want people to run ad blocks and never see your ads? This is how you do it. I mean, of course, you always have, these days, you kind of have to have an ad block because they're so damned obnoxious. So. Anyways, yeah, like you said, strength to strength. You guys have any thoughts on that before we move on?
Oh, I just can't wait to see what they do next to kill their viewership.
Yeah, really? It's like, how can we fuck ourselves in the ass today?
A race to the bottom with Reddit, you know?
All right. Next one is from cron.com, CHRON.com. Self-driving ride shares are already causing traffic jams in Houston.
I love this.
A fleet of Cruise self-driving cars is beta testing in Houston this week, and the autonomous operation is already experiencing a few hiccups, it appears. On Monday night, Houston police responded to calls concerning a row of self-driving Cruise-afflicted affiliated Chevy Bolts stopped at a malfunctioning Montrose intersection. Onlookers shared images to social media showing autonomous vehicles parked three abreast in the northern lane. Oh no. of Montrose Boulevard at Hawthorne Street. So they blocked all the lanes. Basically, they gave up to a busted traffic light and just stopped and then blocked the road.
They were stuck in a logic loop. None of them could figure out who goes first.
Drivers,
so they just didn't.
Yeah, drivers in other cars can be seen sitting behind the stopped Cruise vehicles at the light, which was stuck in a four-way red condition following a strong thunderstorm that passed through the city. Montrose resident Simon Newton said the north northbound cruise cars were gone when he arrived at the intersection, but that police were attempting to communicate with a fourth driverless car that had stopped in the southbound lane. The police were tapping on the glass and asking the car to move on. They didn't know how to do it. It was like, I don't know, just hit it. I mean, tapping on it and asking it to move? There's nothing in there. Newton told...
They think these are robots?
Yeah, I guess. Newton told Tron, all the other human-driven cars could respond to the police. The cruise vehicles can't do that. A cruise representative told Cron that the stop vehicles were not occupied and that the company works with first responders and new markets on how to handle such situations. Okay, nobody cares if anybody was in the car or not, because it was all the cars behind it that people were worried about.
Here's how you respond. For any cops that may be listening, take out your billy club. You smash the driver's side window. You unlock it. You get in. You then switch to drive and push the gas pedal down and then move the car into the nearest ditch.
Yeah, that's not how that works, man.
Call them and have them come pick up their car.
Or impound it and charge them for it. A cruise representative... Oh, okay, I already said that. Quote, our vehicles were stopped at an intersection where the lights were not cycling and showed all red, unquote, the representative said in a statement. Quote, while some vehicles took a little time to safely navigate the intersection, all vehicles were able to clear the intersection autonomously. Safety is embedded in everything we do, and our vehicles are designed to adhere to all traffic signals and follow the rules of the road, unquote. While bizarre...
Apparently not.
Yeah.
I want to throw that in there, because... whenever the stoplight defaults to that, it's no longer a stoplight. You're to treat it as a stop sign. They didn't do that.
While bizarre, Monday's incident in Montrose was a relatively small blip compared to other issues involving cruise cars witnessed in Texas in recent days. Onlookers in Austin earlier this month shared images of a traffic jam on Austin's San Gabriel Street involving a long line of cruise cars. In one instance, two cruise cars appeared to be locked in a driverless standoff facing each other nose to nose in the same lane of traffic. The robots are trying to figure it out. They don't know what to do. As of Wednesday morning, autonomous cruise cars in Montrose could be seen ferrying passengers along Westminster Road. A General Motors subsidiary, the company began offering a rider wait list for prospective Houston passengers back in May and is currently using employee rides and, quote, select friends and family, unquote, to test its fleet in the area. For locals like Newton, the prospect of a prolific driverless car network in the area carries as much allure as it does uncertainty. Quote, I think drunk driving is a big problem, unquote, Newton said. Quote, I think there's a future where driverless stuff helps, but I'm also concerned that we're part of an experiment, and I don't know if this stuff is really ready for prime time yet, unquote. Well, they're ultimately wanting to push it to the idea of you don't own a car, you just always take one of these rider services. Which
we've already fixed the drunk driving problem. It's called Uber.
Yeah. I was going to say, depending on where you live, that might work, but I don't know. I just think it's funny that these things like aren't handling things correctly and it's blocking traffic. Police officers sitting there trying to tap on the glass. Hello? Hello? Like, if you're close enough to tap on the glass, can't you see there's nobody in the car?
They're not recruiting the best and brightest morphs.
Oh, that might be... Yeah. Next article?
Yep.
Well, on this one, is there... I think there's a programming solution they can do on that just to know when the red light's stuck on red, treat it as a stop sign. We do have a standard time for red lights in this country, don't we?
Well, no, but there's probably a minimum. It's like once it's been there for so long, you know that something's up. I would assume, though, that they would have some kind of a control center going, and that if a car hasn't moved in a certain period of time when it's supposed to be moving, you'd think it'd be throwing up an alert. You know, get somebody in their control center to look at it and say, hey, what's going on? Why haven't these cars moved? They're like, oh, it's flashing red. Something's wrong with the traffic light. Manually move the car along, you know?
That would require real-time monitoring, Morps.
Oh, and they don't want to pay for that, do they?
That's the issue. They don't want to pay for it. Actually, if I was the city they were trialing it in, I'd make sure they had real-time monitoring.
I would kind of think that would be a requirement. Just because you've got a car moving around on the road, right? I mean, got to be able to respond quickly if something goes stupid. You know, what if somebody drunk T-bones the damned thing? You need somebody to be able to respond to it.
What if it fucks up with a passenger in there?
Oh, yeah. That'd be...
You know, like...
Well, it would be like the Google Maps story we did a couple of weeks ago where the guy drove off a bridge because Google Maps told him to.
Yeah, once again, I'm not all in on blaming Google for that one. I just want to be fair on that.
I know, but the driverless car would be a lot worse. Cause
I mean, I just...
You have a stack of them at the bottom of that hill. It's just
I have no problem with a stack of driverless cars at the bottom of a fucking river.
As long as nobody's in them.
Hey, take your chances. I'm not really that concerned about you if you want driverless cars. I'm sorry. You're an idiot. Yeah, you deserve it. Sorry, Fox, but it's the truth. Driverless cars are for stupid people. You just shouldn't be giving our autonomy away like this.
I think if you take the driverless technology and use it to augment driven cars, so like being able to click on like a driverless mode when you're on the highway, being able to alert the driver if something, because the car can react faster than you can kind of things. I'm not sure what all those things would be, but I could see those being as a good idea, but my car tries to do some of that stuff. And I get a little tired of getting the collision avoidance warnings because somebody in front of me by five or six car lengths decided to turn, and I didn't feel the need to slow down.
Yeah, I rode in the wife's new car a couple of days back.
You got a couple of those too, where it's just like it says collision ahead, and it's like, what?
I'm glad it was a very short trip because I was just getting frustrated with it. Like every fucking 10 seconds beeping at you because there's a car somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. And as I said, they replaced practicality with technology and fucking ruined it, the experience of driving.
Well, I've got the adaptive cruise in mind. I like that. That's kind of handy. But, I only use
cruise control once in my life. I hated it.
Okay, well.
It doesn't feel like you're driving, man. You don't feel like you're in control of the vehicle.
I mean, I guess I always feel like I can take control back from it fairly quickly, so... Because every time I do, it responds.
I mean, maybe, I don't know. I just think I'm more... I don't want to say more passionate about driving, but it's just one of the things I thoroughly enjoy in the top five things of life.
Sure. No. Well, I will say... The one thing I had in previous car that I don't think this one doesn't have, where it would try to parallel park for you, I tried to use it once, and it just kind of kept on rolling and didn't do it. Never used it again.
Yeah.
It's like I'm sure it works because they put it in the car, but I'm not using that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you.
It kind of depends on the type of driving I'm doing on whether I say cruise control is good. You've been in the States, are you? We have some stretches of just long straight. And on that, I set it to 85 or 80 so that I don't get a speeding ticket and then just drive. But if I'm on any of our nice curvy back roads...
Oh, yeah. No, you're doing that by hand.
I do that by hand, and I'd also like to do it by hand in a manual because it's... That's fun driving.
Oh, I'd kill you, madman, if to drive a manual car again. But the physicality is just—I just can't do it. But I hear you on that one. Especially your highway system set up like an autobahn. I think it should be unlimited speed. To be honest, like it was designed for.
So if I'm on the backcountry roads, yeah, I wouldn't do cruise control. But if it's a utility drive, I'm going from this city to this city, and I know it's pretty much straight away. cruise control, and then some heavy metal to, well, range of music to keep my mind from going into the zombie mode.
Yeah, I'll give you that one. Some of your highways are fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, and even some of the ones I normally drive, I only use the cruise on certain parts of it because either it's going to be too much traffic to really use the cruise, so you're manually driving that, or there's parts of it that just the cruise just doesn't seem to work that well on, you know, because you have to adjust too often. So the adaptive cruise is better, but yeah, there's definitely parts, especially going through some cities, that it's just like, nope, you're doing that by hand. Fuck that. So, oh. But speaking of the robots, we can move on to the next one here. This is from VentureBeat.com. Whoops, Google search caught publicly indexing users' conversations with Bard AI. Google Bard, the search giant's conversational AI product, underwent a big update last week that earned it mixed reviews. But this week, another older Bard feature is coming under scrutiny. SEO consultant Gagan Gotra observed that that Google Search had begun to index shared Bard conversational links into its search result pages, potentially exposing information users meant to be kept confidential or contained. This means that if a person used Bard to ask it questions and then shared the link with a designated third party, say their spouse, friend, or business partner, the conversation accessible with that link could be scraped by Google's crawler and show up publicly to the entire world in its search results. On X, formerly Twitter, Gotra posted a screenshot of evidence of several Bard conversations being indexed by Google Search.
Oh, that is crap.
Google Brain researcher scientist Peter J. Liu responded to Gotra on X by noting that Google Search indexing only occurred for those conversations that users had elected to click on the share link on, not all Bard conversations, to which Gotra patiently explained, quote, most users wouldn't be aware of the fact that shared conversation meant it's indexed by Google and shows up in SERP. Most people, even I, was thinking of it as a feature to share conversations with a friend or colleague and it just being visible to people who have the URL. So, yeah, they need to.
They need to explain that means shared to the entire planet.
Yep. Yeah, because looking at the example screenshot here, the third one is how to use Google's Bard roleplay feature to improve your writing. Okay. Given the history of AI chatbots and roleplay, just going to throw that out there. Because we've talked about
stalker crazy chicken of a heartbeat.
We've talked about the AI apps on smartphones when they tried to remove some of the more interesting role play aspects and the response online from the attendees crowd. So just having this shit publicly indexed and searchable. Well, it's Google. What'd you expect?
Yep.
I don't know. Maybe only share with the, I don't know, four people I said share it with.
So, anyways, I've got one story left, but we're at an hour. So, and the story I have left isn't really that great of one. So. Basically, Google is accepting DMCA complaints for future violations.
Well, that's good. What, they're future telling. They're fortune telling now.
Yeah, basically.
How do you know that I'm going to be committing copyright fraud in 30 years? I don't even know that I'm going to be alive in 30 years.
It just comes from Google recently revealed that it preemptively blocks hundreds of millions of URLs before they appear in indexes. This isn't required under law, so refer to them as DMCA takedown notices is immediately problematic. Google's web takedown form states that it's company policy to, quote, respond to legally valid copyright removal requests, unquote. In addition, it also accepts notices that aren't legally valid, at least under the DMCA. So yeah, basically they're trying to preempt and get ahead, but the article is totally written as if they're trying to do Minority Report and predict what, you know, bad links are going to be.
So, oh, so if they're going to try to, I don't know, go after zmovies.net, they're going to also block zmovies.org, zmovies.uk.
Yeah, I think that's more what it is. Trying to do, you know, predict other URLs and things like that. But,
I still think that's kind of crap.
It is.
It's just because one site's doing, well, illegal, possibly immoral things, doesn't mean that someone else isn't going to grab the next URL in the chain and be like, I want to make a legit site. This one's, I don't know, movie reviews. Or we're just going to call it Z-Movies.
Well, what if you were a historian interested in the ports and calls of privateers during the 1800s? So, anyway, yo-ho, that's all I've got for tonight. Listen to the stream, we're always working on it. Pure decking every Thursday, except for next week, because I'm not going to be near any of my normal equipment. The Galaxy 15 radio site, Project Enigma when I get it ready, which I just haven't had time to work on it. I just literally haven't worked on it, so I'll get the BBS built at some point. Maybe in a couple of weeks, because I'm taking some time off work, so hopefully I can put some time in. We'll see. Madman, closing thoughts.
Teenage drivers are my only reason for thinking smart cars could be a good idea. I mean, so far, I haven't had one back into me. Well, back into my non-moving, stationary, brightly colored car. After, you know, warning signs and shit.
All right. Are you closing thoughts?
Thinking of a little project this week for people who own cats. Empty that kitty litter on Friday and fill it back up with Pop Rocks and see if Kitty likes that better.
That'll be exciting.
It's a slow weekend, what can I say?
You do know stress is bad for cats, right?
Not my cat, not my problem.
You go with the classic, you know, scotch tape on the bottom of their feet. That's always hilarious.
Yeah, but that one's been done. I want to see the Pop Rocks' kitty litter.
Oh. Just make it pop.
Thank you for your continuing patience during this transitional zombie apocalypse. Your satisfaction is very important to us.
Man, I'm sorry about this. I hope this doesn't ruin your day.